The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
And hello again, Andrew Horowitz here. It is the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode 4. And you know, in only a few short weeks, what is really great is that our podcast here, this little thing that we're doing called the Disciplined Investor, has done extremely well on many of the podcast networks. As a matter of fact, we're in the featured and the top list of iTunes right now in the investment category. And with your help, continuation of your support, what's going to happen is I hope that we were going to be one of the top podcasts on the entire network. So thank you so much for that. And all I can ask from you now is to continue on listening, continue with your subscriptions, and I will do my best to bring you some great money-making ideas. That's what I'm here for. Let me tell you a couple of things that have been going on in the last week or so. What's amazing is that not only have we seen a great real move in our podcast up the iTunes network, but we've also seen it on other sources such as Podcast Pickle and Podcast Alley. And we're seeing a lot of email come in, what I've asked you for, so we can answer your questions on the air on this podcast in the mailbag section. And we're going to do that today. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that soon. We're also going to talk today about some usable screens for oversold conditions in the markets. I'm going to teach you exactly how to go on the Money Central site. I'm going to actually put a link up for you and show you how you can find some stocks, some real gems that are oversold. Because if you would utilize some of these in the last week or so, maybe the last 2 weeks since we saw that incredible move down in the markets back in February, and then the move back, that huge, huge, huge move back in the markets over the last 2 weeks post that, you would make it just an awful lot of money. And finally, we're going to talk about some credit issues. You know, with this whole subprime issue, there's going to be a lot of fallout when it comes to regular non-subprime, if you will, mortgages and second mortgages and credit in general. We're going to see a real tightening of this, and I'm going to show you what to do in order to make sure that you are protected and set up well so that you don't have to worry moving into the future about any of these issues. So in closing on this opening piece, do me a favor if you can. Obviously, it's real important that you continue subscribing for me and we can keep this thing going and try to make sure that we give some great advice and some great tips on money, finance, investments, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and all that. But also, if you could do me a favor, if you like the show today, if you like the show the last couple of times, go over to the iTunes directory, which is the mother of all directories, obviously, and post a review at the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Tell it what you think, you know, good or bad. Say what it is. Let everybody know what's going on and how you've enjoyed it, or maybe even how you've used it. And then that will help us as well move up the rankings. So there's going to be a good mix today in talking about a variety of financial topics. There's also a good week we had, wasn't it? Because over the last few days, 7 days or so since I was with you last, the market has had the best performance that it's seen in the last 4 years. I mean, who would have thought of that just a mere 2 or 3 weeks ago? Ben Bernanke, the Fed chief, decided on Wednesday to hold off on interest rates. The market liked that because he didn't want to move his interest rates up. And he really didn't mention that he was too concerned about the subprime meltdown, although he hinted at it. And more importantly, the forward-looking statements, his view of the future, wasn't at all concerning to most investors. And that was a good thing. The markets jumped dramatically, and then we saw China and the Asian markets, many of them up to all-time highs again after dropping about 8 to 10% in a very short time only 2 weeks before. So I think that when you look at the market dynamics of today and the economics that are coming out, when we see the housing starts, when we saw the unemployment rates of last week, things are actually not so bad. There was a huge fear that swept through the markets in the latter part of February. And unfortunately, many people moved out and sat on the sidelines. But if you were like many of the people that I counsel, and if you were listening to the podcast and reading the blog, you would have seen a lot of great opportunities to move into. We were really pushing hard for Caterpillar. We did some shorts on some of the alternative or the ancillary financial areas. I also want to tell you that the CNBC challenge, which I, again, has said is very, very flawed and concerned about. Good news is that I'm still in the top 1% of the overall contestants, making about 27% in the last 3 weeks overall on all my investments. And what I've done with that is a very aggressive posture of looking for earnings news that comes out and investing just prior to that. So I go to the Money Central site, I find out who is coming out with earnings that day and or that night, pre-market or post-market, invest all of the money in that, and the next day then sell. And that has netted a total of $272,000 of profit on the original $1 million in only 3 weeks. An amazing performance, I think, but something that you can do too. If you want to see the actual stocks that I bought, you go look at the blog, and there are entries for each week, a summary of what I did buy and what I sell and the prices that they were bought and sold at and how many shares were bought and sold. Okay, so let's get into this whole discussion about how to use the information that is available to us today on a couple of great areas. We're going to stick to the Money Central site today by Microsoft. I think that's one of the best ways to really get information. And today we're going to talk about screening stocks. Where do we find stocks that are oversold? And what does oversold mean? Usually oversold is an indication that individuals and maybe even investment firms have sold the stock to a point that is beyond the real number that it should be at this time. But at some point, there is fear that enters into the markets, as we talked about. We talked about that a lot in our last episode. And we talked about knowing when to sell because we want to make sure not to have that fear kind of worked up into our sell discipline. But really utilizing that fear on a contrarian play to find out that if the stock is oversold at this point, is it a great investment for me today? So how do we do that? Well, one of the things that I did for you is on the site right now. You can take a look at the blog site in the show notes for this episode. What I've provided you is a link for the a screen. A screen is a quantitative analysis of finding out a stock based on a variety of indicators, usually technical indicators. Well, this one is a screen that I call oversold. It's used in the Microsoft MS Money Central site that will allow for the stock screener to pull up stocks that meet this criteria. And again, in the show notes, all the information on how to get there is there. Obviously, use the information with some bit of skepticism because you want to always make sure to do the research, not just invest blindly. But what I did first was I said, hey, you know what, screener, I want you to give me all the stocks that are in S&P 500 index. That's the first screen that I want to do. So obviously, from the universe of stocks that are available, we now just whittled that down to about 500 stocks. The next thing I said is I want at least a market capitalization of 500 million. Now, what we're doing here in this example, this oversold screen, is we're going after stocks that are hopefully quality stocks that are in the S&P 500, but also that have a market capitalization of at least $500 million. In other words, getting towards the larger of the mid caps. Really not the total, the large super caps, but the mid caps plus. And also what we want to do was find those stocks within that universe that had the last price, which was less than or equal to 90% of their 200-day moving average. So what does that mean? We're looking for stocks that are 10% below their 200-day moving average. We further want to find stocks that have been seeing a good amount of volatility. So what we then did is put an overlay in there that shows the percent of the price that has changed in 1 week. So in other words, how much has this stock moved in 1 week? And we want that to be greater than the percent change of last month. In other words, we want to make sure that the stock change has been greater than the change last month. So we're seeing some volatility increase. Furthermore, to make sure that we're seeing it on the downside, well, first of all, we want to make sure that it crossed below its 200-day moving average since the last quarter. So it's a stock that is obviously lower than its 200-day. And the average daily volume over the last 2 weeks is greater than the average daily volume last quarter. Again, it is picking up momentum. And as of the podcast that I am publishing right now, as of the date that we've done this, ran that criteria, ran it on the Money Central site. And by the way, what you'll have to do is get the Toolbox Deluxe. The toolbox, the investment toolbox through Money Central is free, by the way, but it gives you advanced screening, it gives you advanced charts, and probably 10 or 15 more features than you would just going on. And all you have to do is sign up either for a Hotmail account or the Passport account and log in. And once you log in and you get there, you're going to get this screening mechanism. Well, we got five stocks out of this right now. We got Amgen, Intuit, Centex, Constellation Brands, and Jabil Circuit. So those stocks, when you look at those, quite interestingly, are stocks that have really fallen down dramatically over the last number of weeks. They look to be stocks that may be characteristically oversold. What I would do now is take these stocks, put them in a chart, look at their MACD, look at their moving average convergence divergence indicator, and see if there is some kind of convergence. Very simply, see if there is the movement of the stock that shows a progression upwards moving forward. Look at the stock from its support on a technical analysis, support and resistance lines, and find out where those levels are. And if it makes sense, this gives us a great baseline, a place to start to find stocks that will actually hopefully move up dramatically because they are oversold. Oftentimes, stocks that are in this type of screen have a very high short interest ratio. And as such, you're going to see eventually a short cover moving the stock dramatically upward. We've seen it time and time again when stocks are almost so far out of favor, it seemingly they happen to move up very quickly to get back to the point where they originally started. Maybe you would have heard of something like reversion to the mean. Reversion to the mean. Where has their average been? Where is it now? And usually what we find is stocks and indices will revert back to them after a certain period of time if, in fact, they are oversold or overbought for that matter. Quantitative investing is the tool to take emotions out of the investment process. That's what we did here. What we did was we found the stocks that meet criteria based on a variety of technical indicators. And once we had those ideas, we then went after to see if they were a good idea. This one happened to be oversold. Now, it is a contrarian play, but in a market such as this, contrarian plays often work. What you want to do, I think, is go over to Money Central, check out the screen, and you don't have to just use my screen that I provided for you. You can make up your own and then store them and use them over and over, because what is the toughest thing to do when it comes to buying and selling, trading and investing? It's the idea of what it is that you're going to invest in. What is that next position you're either going to buy or sell? That's the greatest difficulty for amateurs and professionals alike. Where am I going to find my next idea? So what this gives you is the ability to find out firsthand what it is that's in the market that may be a candidate for your buy-sell. And that's what we use quantitative investing for oftentimes, you know, the quantitative process at least. Then we go through the technical area and fundamentals. But in this one, we're again looking for the emotional kick of an oversold position and utilizing that to make some money for ourselves. Take a look at this, study it. I think that you're going to be pretty surprised about what you can find out here. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to get those questions that were sent in by a few people here today that I picked out, at least. We have a bunch of people that sent in, I think, some great questions that everybody's going to be interested in that I did choose for this one. Also, I want to tell you this. In the future, moving forward, that we're going to have a giveaway. That's right, something for free. And when you send in your questions to either askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com, a question that you want to be heard on this podcast and answered on this podcast, you're going to be entered into a drawing. And each and every time that we produce a podcast, we are going to give away a book, The Disciplined Investor, the book that I've written and that I think that you would very much enjoy. But we're going to give that away to one lucky person each time that we do produce a podcast. So send in your questions to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com or go to the blog site, and on there, there's a mailbox section, and there's a form where you can ask a question as well, and I'll be happy to answer it. I don't answer every question on this format, but somewhere along the line, whether it's an email back to you, whether it's a letter, whether it's on the podcast, you'll get an answer to your question, and we'll make sure to help you out. So we're going to get that in about 30 or 45 seconds. Stick around because I want you to hear this. I think there's some good questions here. And get a pencil and paper ready because I think you'll probably find a good deal of interest in some of the things that other people are asking. Andrew Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll be right back.
Did you know that you can receive regular updates on finance, stocks, funds, and other investment ideas? Just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com/blog and subscribe.
Hey gang, Andrew Horowitz here. And do you have a question that you would like us to answer on an upcoming episode? Well, all you have to do is submit that question at the blog site, which is www.thedisciplinedinvestor.com/blog. Submit your question in what we call the mailbag, and we'll be sure to answer it very, very soon.
Okay, break's over. Let's rejoin our regularly scheduled podcast.
All right, here I am again. Here we are again, and thank you so much for sticking around. You got to the area that we call the mailbag because there are so many questions out there that people have. A lot of questions about finance. It is not an easy area. It really isn't. I know it and you know it. And, you know, oftentimes I think that, you know, I do these a lot of times teleconference calls and these type of forums. And sometimes we get a lot of questions that may be something that's happening in the area of taxes or maybe a certain time of year. But sometimes they're light. But either way, I want you to know this. If you ask the question, I will make sure to answer it. So whether you want to send that in to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com or write it in on the site in the mailbox section of the blog area, hit that because that's a pretty active area as well. I'll make sure that your questions are answered. And of course, I told you before that we're giving away a book each and every time we do a podcast. So why not have an opportunity to get a free book as well? I think you'll enjoy that. And I think, frankly, you'll make some money besides winning the free book. So let's get right into this. Okay, let's take a look. We have a question here from, who is this? Bob R. from Fort Wayne, Indiana. And Bob wrote me, he says, I have three children under 12, and what is the best way to save for college? Should I use stocks or funds? What's great about that is that the whole idea of saving for college these days has changed because besides the fact that colleges are so prohibitively expensive, these days, there are a lot of different ways in which to save. It used to be that maybe you would have bought some bonds or some stocks alone, but now there are actually plans that are available to be utilized for savings, specifically for college savings. The one that I really prefer, aside from the prepaid, which depending on the state that you're in, and this goes to everyone, not only Bob, but depending on the state that you're in, the prepaid plans usually are pretty good. Depending on what it is that you're looking for, usually for undergrad when it comes to the board, which is okay, but really the tuition costs are really excellent. But as an enhancement to that or an alternative to that, the 529 plans that were introduced a few years back allow you to deposit money on an after-tax basis. And what's great about that is that when you take out the money, it is tax-free. The money grows tax-deferred. And usually sometime in the future, if you say you have three children under the age of 12, so you have somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 or 8 years on average for them to be going to school, you get the full tax deferral of the money throughout that time. And you could either do it by either investing a lump sum or you can put in annual gifts each and every year. There are limitations there dependent on the amount of children, how, you know, you and your wife, let's say, Bob, assuming that you are married, and there are limitations on an annual basis or on a lump sum basis. There is some flexibility as well. That's why I really like this because in a 529 plan, you can actually change what they call the beneficiary. The beneficiary is the person receiving the money, the child who's going to be receiving the money for higher education. The money also can be removed from your estate if done properly. And there's some really good companies out there that offer plans that are usually based on mutual funds. Now, this is not something you utilize for trading. This is a long-term investment oftentimes. So when you are thinking about the 529 plans, to answer your question directly, is I would prefer funds, usually mutual funds. The 529 plans that are out there, I like to put many of these on autopilot, whereas they're more aggressive when the children are younger, and the fund or the company that is running the 529 plan will actually adjust it and dial down the risk to make it less aggressive as the child gets closer and closer to college age. Therefore, what happens is that they're getting the benefit of really making their portfolio conservative so that they can guarantee that when they get to college, they're not going to have a high amount of risk. So the 529 plans, you have Schwab, Fidelity, there's a lot of funds out there, John Hancock, great, great 529 plans that are available. And I would suggest you look into those carefully and utilize that, because that's a great way to get the after-tax money in, but also grow it tax-deferred and take it out tax-free. All right, so we have another question here from, who is this? Jennifer M. from Atlanta, Georgia. So she writes, ETFs are becoming very popular, and are they better than mutual funds? ETFs are exchange-traded funds, and this is a question I hear a lot, actually, because ETFs are getting a lot of news. There are separate sections in the newspaper these days for them. So let me start out for the group here and say that ETFs are they're like funds. I mean, they are essentially closed-end mutual funds. I mean, I guess is what they're the closest to, because what they do is have a broad base of investments inside maybe the entire S&P 500 index or a section of the index. The difference is that a mutual fund may have a S&P 500, let's say, as their core investment, and you can only invest in it at the end of the day. 4 p.m. is the time when you invest in mutual funds. That's just the way it goes. With an ETF, you can actually trade it throughout the day, meaning you can actually buy it when you think the markets are going up and trade it. You could also short it, whereas you can bet against it. You can't do that with a mutual fund. The ETFs, they have, most of the time, they're indices, or, you know, and you could see the price appreciation also due to demand. You can't see that in a mutual fund. Mutual fund, they provide unlimited amount of shares when there are buys, and they redeem them when there are sells. An ETF is like a stock. There is a certain amount of shares that are issued, and when you see a lot of demand, it may actually bring up the prices. The negative there is that you also may see the downside risk inside of there due to the fact that the demand is down. So when the markets are moving down, you may see an arbitrage opportunity, number one, but also you may see an incongruency with the actual pricing of, let's say, the S&P 500, which may be down 2%, where the ETF could be down 2.5% or 3% potentially. Now, ETFs come in many different flavors and forms. The S&Ps are called spiders. There's the diamonds through the Dow Jones. There's Goldman Sachs offers a bunch. And again, many of them are good. Some of them have lighter trading than others. I would try to find the ones that are much more, have greater volume, so you have greater liquidity. I do not think, Jennifer, that there is a better, depends on the circumstances. If you're looking to do trading and have the opportunity to buy during the day and you want to sell during the day, not wait until 4 p.m., an ETF is a great way to go. It's an inexpensive way to go. You really don't have to pay extraordinary management fees. A mutual fund, on the other hand, is also an excellent way, but you need to be careful because it could be style drift and the manager's doing things that they didn't anticipate doing and you didn't anticipate them doing when you first bought the fund. So each of them has their benefits. I know that doesn't give you an exact answer to your question, but suffice to say that I think that ETFs are an excellent investment if used properly, so I would have no problem with them. Just make sure that you're really aware of what's going on and what the differences are, which I pretty much explained there, and then you can set up a portfolio of a diversified approach, probably utilizing both mutual funds and ETFs. Let's go to, I think this is the final one for today, Matt G. from Grand Rapids, Michigan. He writes me, he says, great show. Thanks so much for your time. And my question is this. My broker told me that I can reduce risk by adding stops to portfolios. Is that true? First, thanks so much for the kind words about the show. I'm trying hard to make this really interesting and give you some great ideas to make some money for you. So that's what this is all about here. In terms of stops, that's a great, great question, because, you know, during the downsides of the market, when we see a lot of people losing a lot of money, the idea of sell stops is always bantered around as a great idea. Sell stops are a good tool, but if they're not used correctly, they can be very devastating to your portfolio, and simply because of this. If a stock is trading at, let's say, $20, and you put a sell stop down 10%, so at 18, $2 down below the $20 current price, there may be times when that stock has a great volatility due to a quick sale. Somebody's unloading shares, and then it pops right back afterwards. Have you ever noticed that? You'll see a sharp movement down, and then it moves right back up. And usually that's a sign that someone is dumping shares. Someone is getting out of position, and right then and there, it happened too quick for any of the buyers to react. And oftentimes, people take advantage then of that pricing differential and then bid it back up somewhere to where it was before. And oftentimes what I have found, if people put on sell stops across the board on their portfolio, even though they are, yes, limiting the downside, they could get in trouble if they do not put the sell stop down low enough. If you look for a 3 or 4% downside, these days stocks have that volatility almost daily. So you need to be careful to look at what the range of volatility is inside the portfolio and realize I would be selective on what sell stops, because due to the volatility, they could hit, and make sure that you're comfortable with that. If the sell stop hits and you sell, you're done. There are two types of stops. There's the stop, which is a market order once it hits that price, or a stop limit, which becomes a limit order once you hit that stop price. If you want to make sure you're out no matter what, utilize the sell stop. I would say, again, move it down a little bit lower than you think it's going to go, just to make sure that range is covered and you have to sell for no reason, besides the general volatility of the market or of that stock. What you may want to think about, Matt, which is a little bit of a different and more complicated approach, is utilizing puts in the portfolio and buying some puts maybe 2, 3, 4 months out, and possibly even 6 months out, to protect your portfolio and protect the positions you have in it. Because this way you can pretty much have your cake and eat it too. You can, if the stock market moves down, or if the individual equities move down that you have the puts against, you limit the risk, you hedge your risk. But at the same time, if it moves up, you only lose the premium that you paid on the put. So you can get both sides. With a sell stop, you know, there could be accidental executions on the stock. That's the only concern that I have. So if you monitor it on an ongoing basis and adjust it, great. If you're just going to kind of put them on and just walk away, I think it's a big problem. So some type of hedging is a great idea, but meanwhile, I think you need to be very, very careful about that. Again, if you would like to send a question on this topic of investing or finance or money, we'll have some information in the show notes for you again on how to participate in that and maybe even get yourself a free book. But when I get back, I'm going to talk to you about something really important that you need to know about with all the problems that are facing us right now in this market economy related to credit. You need to be aware from a financial standpoint that you have to have as much credit as you can. And I'm going to tell you what you need to be doing right now and tell you a couple little things about what's happening in the credit markets that I've been discussing with a variety of banks. So stick around for just a minute and we'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Are you a disciplined investor? Now you can be. Click on over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and download your copy of the book that's going to change the way you think about investing. That's thedisciplinedinvestor.com.
Did you know that you can receive regular updates on finance, stocks, funds, and other investment ideas? Just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com/blog and subscribe.
All right, we're back. We're going to kind of finish up with this discussion of credit. Andrew Horowitz here again. I am the host of The Disciplined Investor. Thanks again for being here. And as a reminder, if you could please kindly make sure to leave some reviews on the iTunes store, whereas we on the podcast area, you go to the Disciplined Investor podcast entry on iTunes, and there's an area to leave a review. I'll also put that in the show notes if I can, a link to that. And when you do that, it really is good for us. It tells other people what you think about what we're doing here. And if you like what you hear, I'd appreciate it if you put something down. But right now, what I want to talk to you about is the whole idea of credit and what's happening right now in the markets. I've already talked to about a half a dozen banks, and they are clamping down on credit. I have talked to people that I know in business, and what's happening is that they're clamping down on credit and changing their credit lines. There has been a lot of discussion about new legislation due to the subprime fallout, and you need to make sure that you have all the credit you can get your hands on now, even if you don't use it, because there's going to be a major change in the banking structure from the fallout of what we've seen happen. There was just a tremendous amount of people that just sidestepped all of the rules and did things that were really inappropriate, and we don't want to make sure that happens to you. So what we're asking everybody that we know in terms of our practice is to go out and talk to your bank about the second mortgages. See if they offer one at no cost. Usually you'll get one somewhere in the neighborhood of prime or prime minus, maybe a half. And if you can set up a line for yourself and have that in your back pocket, you don't have to worry about qualifying and some of the things that may come up into the future if you do it now. If housing prices continue to drop, you won't be able to get as much credit. If the legislation comes down, or even if it doesn't, banks are going to squeeze credit. They're not going to allow such easy credit as they are now. So make sure that you have that advantage right now. You don't have to use it, and usually you won't have to pay for it. But there's no reason why not to get yourself that credit right now and just hold on to it in the event of an emergency. Kind of an insurance policy for the future. So with that in mind, let me tell you what's coming up next on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We're going to have very shortly in the next podcast an expert on the satellite radio and talking about XM and Sirius as a guest. He's going to tell us about really what to do, where's the better play, what money's to be made. And in the following podcast, we're going to have day trading for profits. We're going to have the president of a cyber trading university on, and he's going to be talking about how you can actually day trade and what it's all about, even for the new investor out there. If you ever thought about day trading, about the excitement of it, and if it's a good idea, he'll probably tell you a lot of things that you want to know and maybe some things that you don't want to know. There is definitely risk in that, but if you do it right and you do it the way that is taught by the professionals, you can actually not only have some fun doing it, but make some money doing it as well. So I will bring him, he's a great guy, and tell you some of the kind of ins and outs, the goods and bads, and we'll go through it and break it down and make sure that you understand it. And if you want to do it, you're going to get some great tips. So that's coming up on this. So again, make sure to tell some friends about the Disciplined Investor. Be aware that the book's coming out shortly. It's coming. It's imminent. I mean, my publishers are telling me it's coming soon. So you're going to get that able to be read and on your bookshelves and on your in your reading library very shortly. All right. With that, we close down another episode of The Disciplined Investor. I'm so glad you took the time to listen to this, and I hope that you'll share it with some friends. Please go to the iTunes site. I'll put a link on the show notes as well for you to go and write a review of this podcast. That's how we really get this moving and get that up the rankings, because that's also important to get the subscribers, which of course is really good to make sure the show is as good as it can be. I hope that the ideas that we presented today will give you some things to think about on how you can make some money, and make sure to use that screen on the Oversold. I think you'll find it to be really interesting in giving you some ideas and some further things that you can do to enhance your portfolio. So thank you so much. This is Andrew Horowitz for The Disciplined Investor. I'll see you really soon.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in and be sure to subscribe.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.